Welcome to episode 2 of Decoded, a podcast by Marriott Digital Services, bringing together the smartest minds, the best digital leaders in the digital space. And this is part 2 in a 10-part series on all things digital marketing. I am Chris, Director of Customer Success at Marriott Digital Services, and I'm joined by Mike, Director of Program Management on our team too. Mike, how are you?
I'm well, Chris. How are you? Those are some flattering words to start us off.
I'm all good. All right. So let's talk about what's on the docket for this episode. We're going to chat the usual kind of digital news, and we'll chat about some pretty cool new tools from Google and some changes in the social space too. We're also going to be joined later by two members of our team, specifically the paid media team. So Eloise and Renee are going to come and talk about all things paid media, what's involved, probably more knowledgeable about this type of stuff than you or I, Mike. So, you know, it would be good to have them along to talk about that type of topic.
I would agree. I'm excited to learn from them. I did paid probably 10 years ago at this point, so I'm very excited to learn more about the modern space.
So it's the holiday season. We're in the middle of December. So before we get into the news, Mike, any holiday wishes that you have for 2021?
Probably, like everybody, some time machine back. The last couple months it felt largely like a Groundhog Day, the old Bill Murray movie. So I'm excited for some changes and trying to embrace Christmas to break up the monotony. How about yourself?
I just want to get on an airplane.
So well, there's news about that we covered today, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think, I mean, I missed the 10, 12 hours of just sitting and staring at a movie with no internet or anything. It's a good time. So
well, maybe next year, sir.
Maybe. Did you see that Airbnb went public yesterday?
I did, and I tried to buy a share and couldn't because it was locked. And then I saw the end price and I was like, that's too rich for me now.
Yeah, so I was looking at it this morning. I'm not really in that game of buying shares too much, but their shares rose from $68 against the initial public offering to $144.71. And Instagram announced some changes recently too. So at the end of October, they announced that their live platform had increased their time limit, which was 60 minutes, and it's now gone to 4 hours, which is a big leap. And more recently, they're allowing, instead of 2 guests in their live stream, they're allowing now 3 guests, specifically in India, though, which I found interesting.
What do you think about live streaming at this point? Do you think this is valuable to users and brands, or just a tweak of the switch?
I can't say that somebody is particularly interested in the Chris Robinson life in his house, so I'm not going to particularly live stream myself. However, I kind of like watching you know, artists, or you know, if somebody like I've followed like sports teams that do it, like kind of the fan view, right? That type of thing, which is pretty interesting. But that leap from 60 minutes to 4 hours seems big to me.
Yeah, I was watching Disney had their investor day yesterday, which they unveiled the new slate of stuff coming to Hulu, Marvel, Star Wars, etc. And I think that stream was 4 hours itself. Like, maybe to your point, there's a play for brands to utilize that through just any outlet that they can stream, just stream away.
Yeah, I think the key thing though with any kind of live stream is the quality of the audio. And we're recording this on the Friday after the FDA discussion yesterday around the vaccines. And I watched that for like 15 minutes and the audio quality was horrendous. And just think you're talking about something that's, you know, world changing, and buy a microphone that's $50, please.
Or have your pal send you the one he's not using, you know.
Exactly. That could be the other option. So Twitter has brought back the ability for people to get the blue tick as well. So people of interest, businesses, charities, things like that. It's been suspended for 3 years. So are you going to be applying for your blue tick, Mike?
Probably after you. Yeah, I this was always one of those things where I've got to believe they give more weight and authority to people that that are in this category. I honestly, I'm just shocked they stopped doing it. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me as to why they didn't. Maybe it was a logistical hurdle, but I'm all for the blue check returning and for you to get yours.
I watched a podcast, but it was with the founder of Twitter, and he was talking about kind of some of the logistics on not so much the blue tick, but more how they manage content within their platform, And he was just talking about the difficulty. You can imagine, I mean, there's millions of tweets every second. And, you know, to try and manage that, there's only so many resources which they have available. So I would think it might be a logistical problem that they took it away. But 3 years is a long time away from it for a logistical problem. So we'll see how that goes. But I will be applying and probably be refused as well. So clearly with the events of 2020, the ability to travel has, you know, really been impacted. And there's some pretty creative things out there. And, you know, there's things where, you know, digital can't really replace, and probably is not intended to replace, the real experience of traveling around the world. But there's some companies making some really aggressive plays in the virtual reality space. So we saw that the German National Tourist Boards producing trips across their country, as well as seeing some of the coastlines and some of their famous castles and palaces. And in Ireland, they're also investing in creating a VR experience around the Giant's Causeway, which was also part of the HBO show The Game of Thrones. So some pretty cool things happening in the space of VR.
I've played the Star Wars immersion games, and they're pretty neat. I don't own a headset or anything, but I have friends that have them, and they're pretty neat. I think the whole experience is, like, you got to fill your time with something, and I think this is something where the technology came mature and it may be the right time. Have you seen the show Upload on Amazon Prime?
I have not. No.
So the concept largely is there is no real heaven or hell. There is an afterlife, and you can, based on your status in life and how much money you have, you can buy a flavor of your afterlife, right? You could stay at something like the Ritz-Carlton or go camping or anything. And the whole thing is really, what if the afterlife is virtual reality? So it's a cool, fun show. I found that at the beginning of COVID times, and it's just very, it matches the reality of the world right now.
Yeah. And one other thing that we spotted as well was a company in Japan called First Airlines are taking people on a plane to nowhere. So they offer a 2-hour virtual reality experience, which is complete with a 4-course meal, window TV screens replicating the exterior views as if you were on a plane. And this actually started in 2017. So maybe they were either 3 years ahead of the game, or they just were very creative in that time. But a first class plane ticket is around $62. So cheaper than an actual plane ticket, I would think. But I don't know. Is that something you'd do, Mike?
Probably not. But I think, you know, influencer Chris with his blue check mark can probably afford that, right?
Maybe. I don't think I'd want to go on a plane to nowhere, though.
Yeah, I could see a little sickness stepping in there. But I mean, listen, I mean, this is just showing where there's demand for experiences beyond being in your home or taking the precautions that you are comfortable with, right? Like, it's cool to see this type of innovation, and maybe it can morph into something that's truly meaningful in a couple of years after we're hopefully through all this mess.
So the Hospitality and Sales Marketing Association, or HSMAI, in the Americas recently published some insights into the digital space as we approach the holiday season. And they were using some pretty extensive Google data to able to come up with kind of 3 trends that are happening so far in kind of the search space. And those 3 trends were traveling these holidays, and the preference for people to be on the road versus flying, search terms around meeting me outdoors, and then lastly around parenting. So was there, as you read the study, Mike, was there anything that kind of really stuck out to you?
Yeah, the along the way stuff is fascinating, because I found myself organically doing that through a lot of this. Is like, what are some steps I can string together when I'm out or making a trip out with my family? I'm living the parenting in COVID time, so maybe avoiding the super parenting thing, or hell, maybe I'm even embracing it. But I thought the along the route stuff was fascinating, because, you know, if you look back at the last couple of years, all those near me and nearby phrases are really jumping up, right? That happens in voice search, that happens in Google on your phone, in your app. That I think those are just, that's natural, exciting things that people can probably put more time into, right? Like, at brands, there's got to be willies for you to put together tours or little guides, or I think any of those walking or driving direction custom apps really matter a lot more than before.
Clearly the along my route kind of keyword usage, so, you know, restaurants along my routes or hotels along my routes, whatever that might be, is likely probably coming from a low base, but it kind of did get me to think, you know, channels like Waze are probably going to, you know, see a jump in the way that people advertise, right? So you've already planned a route and they're encouraging you to go other, in other places where it might be. And that's already active today. The outdoors thing, I can completely relate with. You know, I think they've seen a 900% increase year over year in people searching for terms related to outdoor seating. So things like restaurants with outdoor seating or things like that. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if your personal search terms related to that changed, Mike, over the last 6 to 9 months.
I think so. Probably breweries and wineries are best examples of this, right? I've personally tried to seek anything that's outside and fun to do across, you know, any various interests. So yeah, I mean, this all really resonates to me, and I think it's smart stuff that people can stay entertained with and keeps us practical for now. So yeah, I think it all the data makes sense, and I think it's just really cool to see HSMAI pull this out, right? Like the article that you shared as we were approaching this podcast, is it's nice to see thought leadership coming out of the hospitality industry in a way that isn't just a Skift article or something. So I was really impressed that they found this.
The meet me outdoors thing, I think the key thing for any business to do is, if they're offering outdoor space, and clearly people are looking for that now, is promoting that actively, what they're doing on their website or their social channels or whatever it might be. It's surprisingly difficult, even if you're looking, even where we both live in the DMV area of DC, if you're looking for restaurants with outdoor seating space, or you know a restaurant that you want to go to, but you want to experience what their outdoor space is like so you feel comfortable in booking there, it's difficult, right? There isn't, not many people are grabbing that to showcase what's available to them.
Or they are showcasing it, it's on their websites and not in structured ways that you can pull out. There's a bunch of places that I've looked at that, I mean, I will see first, so I want to go to this establishment, and then do they provide outdoor or something in that vein? And I think often, to your point, what's missed is that in search, that in TripAdvisor, that in Yelp, that in those places we go to do discovery, and it's all living on their websites, right? Which is, of course, it's the epicenter of what a business wants you to do, is ultimately land on that website and take an action from it. But I would rather see all that stuff in addition, I'd like to see it in the channels which we do wayfinding, right? Google has, I think, a series of tools that allows you to input like cleanliness measures and takeout and delivery and all that type of stuff. But I think it can be better done to highlight like this outdoor living that everybody is doing right now or is very popular. So I think there's huge opportunities there and probably some misses from some of those big players. But, you know, it'd be nice to see that continue to grow as the world goes through another set of changes.
So as always, you know, we'll link the article from the show notes. If you want to read more about the study from HSMAI, you can head over there and click on it. It's really detailed. There's so many different metrics, and it talks about both travel and then maybe things which aren't solely related to travel. But there's certainly some interesting metrics in there for anyone to read. Google also recently debuted a new selection of tools to help destinations kind of identify and analyze travel demand too. It was announced through Skift, but it's really geared towards the Asia Pacific region, as kind of that's, I guess, where the travel recovery is showing some signs of promise, and you know, the eagerness to travel is back there. But they, you know, I looked at the tool, it seems pretty cool. You can start, you know, plugging in destinations and start to see kind of the levels of demand that are in that destination. And then it's broken down by source markets. I described it to someone as a supercharged version of Google Trends, like circa 2008, right? They seem to have just put some time, energy, and effort in investing in it.
I just plugged in Australia to go through one of them, and it looks like the Google Trends data with, to your point, just a really good coat of paint and an overhaul of how do you use this data on a macro trending level. If you're an economist, if you're an analyst, if you work on Wall Street or anything, because historically the Google Trends data has been very much in the wheelhouse of what we do for livings and what we provide to our clients. But it's nice to see this very high level, like search is intent is action type of view. And I would say it's super well done. It's nice to see your point about it starting in Asia first, where you know, as much as borders are still closed in some areas, there it's beginning to thaw and reopen. So what would you, Chris, if you were talking to a client, how would you use this data to help them make a decision?
I think some of it's about reality check, you know, in terms of understanding, you know, where demand is today. Like if you're in the US today and you have a desire to go to Europe or the UK, unless you're a passport holder there, then, well, no, even without that, you have to quarantine for a certain period of time. And those time frames have come down now. But even as a British passport holder, for me to go to the UK, you have to quarantine for a certain amount of time, which kind of puts travel off in that way. But conversely, on the other way around, as a British passport holder, if you want to come to the US, unless you have leave to remain, or you're working, you can't come in, right? So I think that those reports are good, like the reality check of you still can't travel in certain markets is important. But as you look towards sort of Asia and places like that, they are going to get it. And also I saw within this Skift article, the Minister for National Development in Singapore states that city is going to use this tool to inform how they open borders safely and using it to provide insights into people's travel aspirations, which so that's crazy, right? I mean, it's such a good way of using technology to be able to say, look, there's a high intent from this market and maybe it's also safe, then they can start to open those borders versus just, you know, throwing a dart at the dartboard and hoping that it works.
Yeah, that's a great point. Triangulate that with maybe even some of the built-in COVID tracking features that exist in apps, right? I know it's being unlocked by countries, territories, cities, et cetera, for the Bluetooth awareness of, hey, have you come in contact with someone? And I mean, it can get a little big brotherish real quick, but you triangulate that with this demand mechanism and maybe it can show you safe places to go or areas you might not have thought about to help inform some business strategies. But I think you're right. It's great data to look at, but what do you really do with it at the end of the day?
Yeah. Well, until either travel becomes easier, however you get there, which we don't need to get into on this podcast, but or you know, they open up certain corridors and things like that, then you know, I think there's still going to be those problems for the travel industry. Like I did see though that someone I follow, he wanted to go to the UK. So instead of quarantining for 2 weeks in the UK, he flew from the US to Dubai, where there isn't a quarantine period, just testing, spent 2 weeks in Dubai, then flew from Dubai to London, and there isn't a quarantine period between London and Dubai. So that's kind of a clever way around it.
If you have that kind of a time on your hands, that's inventive, and that's someone with drive to get where they're going.
Or money, I guess. It's probably the other option. He's probably got slightly more disposable income than you or I.
Yeah.
Okay, so we want to spend some time talking about an in-depth topic like we do on each of our different episodes. So we're going to move forward with an educational topic, and today is all about paid media. And we're joined today by two amazing leaders in this space, Eloise and Renee. So firstly, Eloise and Renee, how are you?
Doing good. It's Friday. Can't complain.
Agreed.
All good. So Eloise, let's start with you. What's your role at Marriott Digital Services?
I am the senior manager over the paid media team and lead the team who manages the property specific room night paid media for our global hotels.
Fantastic. And Renee, what's your role?
Yeah, I'm Eloise's counterpart. So I am the senior manager for all custom outlet media. So working with our team to support hotels' needs for F&B space, the restaurant and bar, spa, meetings and weddings, to provide them some media or to help run media campaigns to support those outlets.
All right. So we'll stick with you, Renee. When we talk about marketing, what do you personally love about marketing?
I love about marketing is that it's the creative arm of things. You know, we work a lot with hotels that have goals and objectives, but marketing is kind of the, what can we do to help support that? So a lot of times it's endless in terms of limits. Obviously there's funding, but what can we do to help, you know, support our hotel's needs and objectives, and where we can have some fun and get creative, and wearing all different types of hats, from creative and collateral to media to digital. There's so much now within that space, and just being able to have fun with putting together plans to help support our hotel's needs and objectives.
And Eloise, how about yourself? What is it about marketing that just kind of gets you up in the morning?
Well, I think that the perfect counterpart to Renee, I love more so the data that informs our marketing and the insight that we now have in order to target the right consumer at the right time, and the advances that we've made to ensure that everything that we're doing for marketing is really enabling our clients' business, and making sure that we are able to flex no matter the time.
All right, so we're going to talk about paid media today. It's a topic that we mentioned earlier that me and Mike probably don't know as much as you guys. So we're really looking forward to diving into and getting all of that intelligence out of you. So before we get started, can you just give an overview? What is paid media? Give the 101 overview.
I think paid media, in the simplest terms, is ad space that you're paying for. So it can run across a variety of different vehicles. It could be out of home, the billboard that you're seeing on your way to work. It could be a commercial that you're receiving through TV, radio, or digital, which is what we're specializing in.
So if you think about the hotel space today, right, and that's kind of where the four of us are probably the experts in, right? That's where we spend the most amount of time. Can you just kind of highlight maybe some of the different paid media channels which are open to hotels today and what they can participate in?
Absolutely. So from a room night perspective, we want to ensure that we're reaching the consumer on their path to purchase. So exposing our potential guest at all points. That could be through display advertising, we're prospecting them. We think that they want to visit a certain area, so we're prospecting them based on that interest, or we're retargeting as they go to a site and then we're reaching them after that fact. We're also reaching them across all of their listings, and then OTAs like Expedia Travel Ads, which you might be familiar with, or Priceline, so that we're always present where our guest is.
And then from the outlet side of things, we're kind of higher up in that marketing funnel, more in that awareness space. So if we're trying to, you know, for the paid search perspective, we're making sure that we are reaching those customers using those targeted, like unbranded keyword terms, to try to get some visibility and exposure to whatever they're targeting. So if it's meetings, if it's weddings, if it's a restaurant, same thing with some of our media partners on the restaurant side. We know that people are using some of these sites like TripAdvisor, Yelp, OpenTable, but then where we come into play is helping them with these boosted listings, these boosted supports, to get the customer or their potential customer to see their listing or their space in that platform, and then ultimately get them to try to convert or book a reservation. So generating that awareness for the different outlets that we help support.
Renee, you brought up an interesting topic, and let's dive a little bit more into learning about paid search. Could you explain to us a little bit about what paid search is in 2020 and why it matters to a hotel or a business?
Sure. So where we focus on, Mike, are these unbranded keywords. So unbranded means focusing on, you know, the destination, if it's for room support, focusing on terms such as restaurant, bar, meetings, not actually using the specific like brand name such as Marriott, for example. So we are using these paid, basically, let's take it a step back, sorry. We put together a kind of a keyword list. So a client comes to us and says, we want to run a paid search campaign to help promote my meetings. Help promote meeting space at my hotel. So we can look at where the hotel is located, hopefully during the whole brief intake, the client will provide for us what their source markets are. So where do they want to target, and then what their spend is. And then we can go into the Google Ads tool. And, you know, just because we've been doing this for a while, we kind of know some of the right keywords, but Google also helps make it a little easy by providing a keyword planner tool where we can go in and start to test out keywords, looking at the different volume, seeing what average CPCs or cost per clicks look like. And that's where then we can take the client's budget and put together a campaign of the right keywords to target. So when a customer goes into Google and then enters those keywords or keyword phrases, the goal is to then have our clients have them come or appear on that top or the, you know, on page one of Google's search engine placement. We also use BrightEdge as well to help. So same thing, like the Google keyword planner tool, we put in some of the keywords that we're looking to target to help generate the awareness, and we can see what that volume is. So does it make sense to bid on these keywords on behalf of our clients to try to go after and capture the awareness of the terms that we want to generate someone to, you know, see our hotel's weddings and then ultimately clicking on that to go to our weddings page of our hotel website to submit an RFP or to learn more about weddings.
A client might think that a keyword will have incredible volume and that we need to focus on it. But when you do the report and you actually look at what folks are searching for, your paid search strategy tends to shift versus what you were initially guessing.
That's top-notch explanation about what AdWords is, how to think about search and keyword strategy. What do you both think about the idea of bidding for a competitor? You spent so much time speaking about why it's important to go after unbranded. There's the demand, there's the area, there's the cuisine type, a location, whatever it may be. What do you guys think about competitor bidding?
So right now, it's a great question, Mike. Right now, our strategy is that we actually do not go after those competitive keywords. So we actually have it disabled within our Google Ads tool. We kind of look at competitor keywords as being like negative. They're on our negative list. It's just kind of an unnecessary spend right now because we'd be upping the cost. We know that those branded competitor keywords are a little bit more competitive, and we know that our competitors are going after that space. So, you know, why do we want to try to drive additional exposure towards them when we're focusing on our own clients? So we stay away from that space, and we don't advise running any keywords for our competitors.
That's great insights, and I think that makes a ton of sense. I'm sure there's probably a cost component with it too.
Yeah.
You outlined the tools that are available, right? There's Keyword Search Planner. There's things like Google Trends and Google Search Demand tools that Chris and I spoke about at the top of the hour. You also spoke about BrightEdge, which is a topic we're excited to get more into in a later episode. But could you tell me, like, what's your favorite way? And maybe Eloise, this one's to you. To find keywords to bid on, what do you like to do with those tools to find the right terms to target?
Well, like I was speaking of before, I think it's about looking at the data and making informed decisions based on what the data is telling us. So running a report and ensuring that we are basing our decisions off volume, we want to cast as wide a net as possible to ensure that as many people as possible will take advantage and actually convert on that keyword. So ensuring that we are using the reports that we have to really drive our decisions.
That's awesome. I think data in use and application from a ton of sources is always an amazing tool at our disposal.
Eloise, we've spoken a lot about there about paid media, and Renee, the same, like lots of good things, right? And lots of different channels which are available to any type of business. But I'm going to now put you in the boots of being a general manager of a hotel, right? You're the boss. You run the budget. You've got $500 to spend and you're ready to spend it. Where are you guys going to put your money?
Well, with only $500, $500 is going to be more of that minimum spend threshold. You would want to allocate it towards our internal tool. It's called the Plus Platform. And it allows us to leverage 10 different channels in order to diversify the spend and ensure that we are capitalizing across these 10 different channels with that small allocation. So we are able to gain exposure through our awareness, consideration, and then also conversion through this specific tool. And just to provide a little bit more insight on what the tool is, we have exposure through meta search, sponsored listings, paid search, display and social, and travel ads. So it's really the space that you want to ensure you're prioritizing your spend first before you're allocating any additional media on top of that.
And I think just to add to that, so if I'm the GM, but I've already done what Eloise is talking about, so I've already invested at the right levels into our Plus platform, but now I have an additional $500 in my pocket, that's where I think my team comes into play at looking at, we know we're going after our rooms and we're capturing that, but now what can we do to help support our meeting business, our B2B side of things, our weddings, our outlets? And that's where our cost per click for all of our different partners tend to be a bit lower. So $500 could get us roughly about a month or so within a paid search campaign. It could get us a few months within some of our other outlet partners like TripAdvisor, Yelp. So we would be able to try to go after more eyeballs from the outlet and B2B side of things after I feel like we put our first $500 into the Plus platform.
You know, I've got a campaign live, right? And things are looking good, but you know, are there any kind of metrics that you think that any business should be looking at today regularly when they're managing paid media budgets? And then secondly, as part of that, is what is success in paid media?
So the metrics that a hotel or a client will look at will be dependent on what their objective is. Is their objective to increase exposure? If it is, then we should be looking at engagement metrics. How many clicks are you receiving? Because we're prioritizing our funds through exposure channels. We know that a consumer might not be as likely to convert, but instead we're prioritizing that awareness, getting exposure. So once you determine what the KPIs, those key performance indicators for your campaign are, based on your objectives, then you know how to define success. And success is one of those metrics that you want to set up when you're building the campaign from the start so that you can determine how the campaign is performing within doing quality assurance within the time frame.
And I think that's really great what Eloise said. And just to add to that, it's just making sure that our clients understand what the potential or estimated return is so that their expectations are very much level set. So when you're looking at from the awareness perspective, your return is going to be rather less than it would be when you're lower in the funnel where the expectation is that that's where the conversion sits. So just making sure that we're understanding their objectives, but level setting, like here's what you can expect to get or what we're forecasting as your return. So that way they understand truly what that success looks like.
You did a great job explaining KPIs, why tracking your data matters. And we've all been in the digital space for a long time and seen the evolution of what tracking is from cookies to pixels to everything is just an exciting evolution. All the rage right now is attribution modeling, people using last click, multi-touch, none of it. Sometimes calls are involved. Can you just give us a 101 on what attribution is and why it would matter to someone?
Attribution modeling. I love this topic. Goes back to data, so seeing a trend here. But essentially what attribution modeling is looking at the ads that you're paying for and seeing if those ads are making an incremental difference. Would a consumer have still paid for this hotel room if we had not served them the ad? So determining if you have layers of media, let's start with digital, and then if you had a TV ad or if you had paid search campaign, looking at all of those layers, can we attribute what we paid for to this booking? So I think that within the digital space, we're very lucky because we can actually track these metrics. And we have a lot more accurate attribution modeling, where I think it really gets interesting is when you start building in everything outside of digital, looking at potentially incorporating out of home, television, radio, and that sort of attribution. I think that as media continues to evolve, that'll be a real sweet spot.
You mentioned, I think it was you, Eloise, that mentioned around, you know, the metrics that you look at depend on the goals that you set. And you spoke a little bit about whatever the KPIs are. So if I'm today planning out a campaign and thinking about, you know, like I really need to drive business in the future, what maybe are the things, the two or three things other than setting your KPIs that when planning a campaign that any business should do to make sure their campaign's successful?
Budget.
Absolutely.
Knowing the funds that you have to work with will determine what you are able to do. It costs money to run an advertising campaign. So budget is going to be a huge determinant of what that campaign will look like. Time frame is another. And then, of course, your objective, your success, and your target, looking at who you are wanting to target.
Yeah, I would agree with all of those.
So the simple method is determine how much money you've got to spend, determine who you want to target, and determine when you want to do it or when you want the business for. And if you do those things, you should be successful. Is that?
And yeah. Determine why you want to do it.
And then we can work, our teams can work with you all once we have all that information to then help put together that ideal campaign that makes the most sense, that will generate the awareness and ultimately lead to those conversions.
You both are, you know, true experts in all things paid media. I mean, you've spoken about things today. I mean, I've worked in digital for 15 years. Mike is a similar number, and you've spoken about things that I'm like, oh man, I didn't even recall that, right? From the deepest, darkest brain. And so why do you think that someone should hire an expert to run any kind of paid media campaigns versus tagging it on to another person's role who probably is not in that space on a day-to-day basis?
I think you should go to an expert because you want to be smart about it. I mean, this isn't something that you just want to do and let it go and not look back. I mean, this is money that you're talking about. And what is, you know, what is that money going towards? This is something that, you know, we work hard for that money and we want it to be served. We want it to serve the right purpose. So what your objectives are. And if you put it in the right hands, it can be well spent and it can be used across the appropriate channels where someone who's day to day does not always include running media, they're not going to know how to properly invest those dollars using the right channels, understanding the KPIs, and even understanding the right tools that are out there to help set a campaign up for success. Like with Google Ads, we talked about using the Keyword Planner, Bright Edge, some of these other resources that a person who is not in this space is not going to be familiar with. And then I think you're just kind of throwing money away. You're not going to see those results or what you're looking to do. You know, with us just kind of being these experts in the field, we have, you know, some really great relationships with a lot of different partners out there. So we have been able to leverage those relationships and get like exclusive pricing, exclusive access, have dedicated resources that someone that's not connected in this space is not going to have and not going to be able to capitalize on. So I think if you are looking to run a media campaign, you should truly do it with someone or an organization or a company that really knows the space and knows the right channels to meet your objectives and needs and how to properly spend your dollars.
So well said.
So I think you've outlined pretty well why you should work with a pro to do your media. But let's say you're that GM that wants to learn more about what Eloise and Renee are telling me is right. And I obviously trust them and believe what they're doing is right. But what are some resources that someone can kind of jock up and learn a bit more about paid media from? Where would you direct the curious client or business person?
I would direct them to LinkedIn Learning or UDEME, the Association of National Advertisers. I think that this is something that a GM could use to learn current media, and it's something that I continue to use as well. Media is ever evolving. No day is the same, and we're continuously improving. So just staying up to date using these tools is really helpful.
Mm-hmm, I agree. I think LinkedIn certainly has a good library. Now I know so many of the universities and local colleges, just with everything being virtual, they're offering a lot of certifications and courses that are available to anyone that just wants to learn or expand their knowledge. So I think that's a great resource. I know Google has their own kind of internal library of different courses and certifications you can take. eCornell is also a great one that has different courses. So I think just really figuring out what you want to learn and then just finding the right, you know, different libraries and tools that we've referenced to help set you up.
Well, I know what I'm doing with my free time around Christmas now.
You're going to do a Google Garage course, Mike? Is that what you're going to do?
Sure.
Something right, tells me you don't actually have that much free time.
I got two little ones at home. Who knows? Maybe I'll just hire a pro.
There's always time for Google.
That would be the ideal case.
Eloise and Renee, thank you so much for your time. We could talk about paid media for hours on end, but we recognize that people have got things to do. So we kept it to kind of the 20-25 minutes. But what we'll do is we'll link any kind of things that you've referenced, you know, like the American Association of Advertisers and the Google courses and things like that, all from the show notes. But if people want to learn more. But again, thank you so much for coming on and talking about it. And we'll probably do some more paid media stuff later down the line as well. So we'll ask you back to do that as well.
Thank you for having us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we'll wrap this up. Thank you so much for listening. We're grateful that you joined this journey with us. You can get in touch with Decoded, the show, on Twitter at @MDS_Decoded. Or you can also email us, and you can do that at MDS@Marriott.com. If you liked today's conversation and you can spare a few minutes and you can share a review, that would be amazing. It really does help people find our podcast and ensure that we're sharing the knowledge with more and more people. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, so just after the new year, and we're going to talk through the digital news like we did today, but we're also going to cover managing digital content, why it's important, how to think like a customer, and the areas to really truly focus on. You can enjoy this podcast on any good podcast app, and you can learn more about digital marketing at mdsdecoded.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.